Welcome to the Big Easy Sportsman Podcast. If you live and breathe hunting in the outdoors like I do, this is your show. Here we'll discuss tips and tactics to make us better hunters and better people, forever holding ourselves to a higher standard both in and out of season. Now let's get into this week's episode.
Back for another one, man. It's Wednesday, January 24th. And it is a very, very rainy and disgusting and depressing January 24th, to say the least.
Yeah, it's roads are flooded over here. They stopped the school bus routes for up here. They didn't.
I heard that
they wouldn't run up here on the north side of the parish.
Dude, I know it freaking stormed in Ponchatoula. Like some of the rivers are touching the bottoms of the bridge. Like it got pretty bad.
We went to A Meat earlier to do a little grocery pickup from the store. We had to get some baby formula and all. And dude, I guess because so much water come down all at once so hard, so fast, the ditches on the side of the interstate, not the median, on the sides, were like almost up to the interstate. I hadn't seen them like that in forever.
Yeah, we had to go on a job in Luling, so we was coming back. Like, we missed the majority of the rain for, like, the first part of the day. And then as we were coming back, we had to drive, like, through the band at, like, a 45-degree angle. But it was – it wasn't too bad where we were driving, but it's, like they say, that training effect, how it's just one band that just keeps pounding. Uh-huh. Like, they got, like, 9-something inches already in parts of Baton Rouge and Lafayette. And they're saying we could get another 5 between tomorrow and Saturday.
Yeah.
So – I don't know, man. We went from a drought this past summer. We couldn't pray for rain. And then here we are now that, you know, this season started. And, this year. And, man, we probably got, 20 inches of rain in the first 3 weeks of January.
Yeah. When it rains, it pours. Ain't that what they say?
Yep. So what do you think about this past year, Chase?
It wasn't too hot for me, but seems like everybody else had a pretty good year. I mean, just all around general, I think it was a pretty good year. Like I said, I didn't do too good, but I had fun. It was another one in the books. That's about all I can say for it on my end, but I enjoyed it. And I know y'all had a pretty good year and all, and it's coming to an end. I went and got my camera out and took my lock on down and went and got some plywood and boarded up the windows in my box stand so the buzzards and whatever else don't get into it on the off season. So I'm about done.
Yeah, I got one last ditch effort to try and get something on the ground this weekend. And I hate the fact that they end the season in the middle of the week. That's the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah.
Like, I know they have certain dates or whatever, but it's just kind of weird. Like, the season started on, like, a Tuesday or something this year, and then now it's ending on a Wednesday. It just sucks.
Right.
You know, I'm one of the people, I like to be in the woods opening day, and I like to be in the woods the last right. day. You know? But
yeah,
what can you do?
If you're somebody who has to work every day during the week, 9 to 5 or whatever. That would suck.
Yeah, it was a pretty good year for us, though, man. Like, I mean, obviously, Colt got to kill a booner. I mean, that's pretty cool to say the least. But
oh yeah,
he killed that 8-point and obviously shot the booner in Illinois. And I mean, I struck out on public in Illinois. But I was able to get a pretty good buck here. Well, two good bucks here.
Yeah, both of them are nice.
But, I mean, it was – people want to measure success of, like, a season in the amount of what they kill or how big it was and all that. And, like, even though I've been successful this season, it doesn't feel like a successful season. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why, man. It's a weird vibe for this year.
Yeah, mine's been a fail.
You can't say that.
Hey,
you killed a buck in a doe, man. I wouldn't say it's a fail.
Been a fail. I got a freezer full of meat, and that's really all I was worried about, just getting some meat to hold me over till next year. But I didn't get to kill the buck that I would like to.
Yeah.
You can't do it every year, I don't guess. Well, I mean, unless you're like Cody or somebody else who does do it every year, but I hadn't figured that
part out. Yeah, we can't talk about him anymore.
Yeah, I ain't figured that part out yet, but, you know.
Yeah, it was a good year, though, man. Like I say, I went this past weekend. I went up to some public here in Louisiana and just drove up for the day. Like, I left later than I wanted to, but I just was not waking up that early. Like, it's to the point of the season now where, like, it's really, really hard to get up early and go in the woods because you've been doing it for the last 4 months. But I got up and drove up to public and went in. I don't know. I got there around 10:30 or something like that and went and did the self-checking permit, you know, drove to a spot I just found on the map. And when I walked in there, man, I started finding sign immediately. So, like, where this is, you have to walk down the side of the levee. Uh-huh. So you park on the levee and you drop down in there. And I went to a spot. I don't know if I told you where I was going. There's a lake that kind of runs in there in between. There's a strip that runs in between private and a lake.
Yeah. We kind of talked.
Not to give too much away.
Yeah.
But where the lake kind of pinches down at the road. I didn't realize this at the time. So I walk in, and it's an open bottom. I mean, you can see 300 yards through it. So I start finding some rubs and scrapes, but nothing really seemed fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of like, man, I don't know if it's nighttime sign or whatever. So I just started walking. I walked maybe, I don't know, it must have been 800 yards, you know, half a mile or so. And I found like a little rub or two, but it wasn't anything crazy. And I just kept walking. I walked up like the like right through the middle, through the bottom. And in there, it gets kind of hilly. Like, there's a couple little ridges that come up on both sides. So it's kind of a well-defined bottom. But I walked through there, and I just wasn't finding sign, dude. I don't know why. And like, everything pointed to the sign being on that side. Like, where the private is, there's kind of a ditch that separates a private, and then it's like an old grassy road that they had used years ago, and then it's corn and beans. So I was like, well, you know, it's later in the season. I'm sure, you know, down here we don't cut corn until November or December. You know, like in Illinois and Indiana, they're cutting in October.
Mm-hmm.
So our stuff stays in way later. So I thought, you know, I'll walk this, and, you know, I should be able to see some sign where they're coming and going, you know, back and forth to private. I just didn't see it. Like, I just did not see it. I started to think there wasn't any deer in there. So I pulled up my map and I'm like, man, I'm missing something. I don't know what it is. And then I thought about it and I'm like, hey, dummy, all the sign that was right off the road, like, actually look at your map, zoom out and look at your map where all the sign was. It's a pinch between the levee and the lake.
Yep.
It ain't but about 80 yards strip of woods. Every deer that comes through there has to go through that pinch. Huh. Like, I just breezed past it, like completely overlooked it, walked past the sign and walked a mile back there just to turn around and come a mile back.
Yeah. See, I think
when I got back,
I think we do that a lot more than we realize.
Well, you're the perfect person to talk to it about. Cause you, I mean, that's your style is trying to get on them close off the road. And not that I'm the person that likes to go, you know, 2 miles or 3 miles in there, but you never know. Like, man, it's hard to look at sign and say, oh, that's nighttime sign, right, or that's daytime sign. Right. Who freaking knows?
Well, see, I don't think that any kind of sign you find, I don't think neither one of them is narrowed down to strictly nighttime or day. I think they do it both. It's just when and how consistent.
Yeah. And especially in like a big wood setting like that.
Right.
You don't have a lot to kind of narrow the deer down or pinch them down to this one specific area. I mean, they can go literally anywhere they want to in there. So after I thought about it for a minute and I'm kicking myself, I'm like, man, I cannot believe that I just didn't zoom out on that map and look and see the natural pinch. So after I walked a mile plus in there, right, I turn around and I hump a mile plus out. to get back to the road. So I get back, I'm right off the edge of the road. I mean, dude, I'm standing 60 yards inside the woods. I go back to where the rubs and scrapes were. I'm like, well, it's like there's no sign going towards private. The only logical explanation is that there would be sign towards the lakeside. Mm-hmm. So that's where I went. I walked to the edge of the lake, like the corner of the lake where that pinch kind of meets the big woods section. And I got right there and I noticed like a couple of other little small scrapes and like some old rubs. I'm like, man, I don't have anything to lose. Like I'm going in 100% blind, never been in this spot ever in my life. So I'm just trying to find sign, you know? So I walked next to the lake and I just turned and started walking like up the edge of the lake, you know, like 40, 50 yards off the edge of it. And there was kind of like a perfect travel corridor. Like it's open bottom, but like 20 yards off the lake is like these little twisted up gnarly trees. And it's thick, dude. Like it's like an old swamp where like in years past, that little bottom would be underwater. But this year it's not because it's been so dry. Right. So when I seen that, I was like, well, I'll just walk right through the middle of this little transition. You know, it's maybe 60 yards, like 30 yards to my left would have been like palmettos and like a bunch of thicker stuff. And then 20, 30 yards to my right was all those little twisted up gnarly trees. And it's like thousands of them. I mean, they're stacked in there like toothpicks. Huh. It's thick right off the edge of that lake. So I just started walking up the edge and I saw a rub. I'm like, is that a rub? I had to look at it a couple times and it was on a big tree. I'm like, huh. So I pull up my binoculars, look at it. Sure enough, it's a rub. So I walk up to it and it's on a cypress tree. That's about as big around as my leg, but it wasn't like super tore up. It was, you know, like you've seen them hit like cypress and stuff like that, where like they just barely kind of rub their forehead on it. They don't even hit tines.
Yeah.
So I went and looked at the tree and I got up close to it. I'm looking, I didn't see a tine mark in it, but it was roughed up. And I started thinking, I'm like, Jesus, how big is this deer to not touch his tines, you know, on a freaking tree that's the size of my leg. So
that was a doe.
Yeah. Or somebody's in there just scraping on some trees. But
she's identifying as a buck.
Hey, it's probably a little messed up spike where both of his spikes go straight out left and right.
Yeah, they just fell out. Uh-huh. A little wonky, little dink.
He's probably about 90 pounds. So yeah. After I seen that rub, I'm like, man, you know, maybe I'm on something. So I just kept walking up the edge of that lake. And I walked about 40 or 50 yards and came across another rub. And this one was for sure a rub, like tine marks in it and, you know, the whole nine. This podcast is brought to you by American Hunter. 2009 Ronald Reagan Highway, Covington, Louisiana. Stop in and see Ronnie, Jeremy, and Bart. I mean, these guys treat you like family from the second you walk through the door. We've all been to that pro shop where the guy's looking at you from behind the counter, and you can just tell that he's annoyed that you're there. This is not the atmosphere that those guys try to build. They carry everything from bows to guns to crossbows and everything in between. And if he doesn't have it in the store, he can absolutely get it there. So go give those guys a visit. Go check them out. Go shoot the 3D range and tell them that the Big Easy Sportsman sent you. Also brought to you by Old Indian Tricks LLC. Dan's scents are something that we've been using for quite a while now, and I refuse to go into the woods without them. Between the Seymour Deers and the Rookum Juice, I don't think there's an easier way to create a mock scrape. It's literally as simple as cleaning out the area below the licking branch. Two or three shots on the limb, three or four shots in the dirt, and that's literally it. So go check them out on Mock Scrape Nation on Facebook and go over to oldindiantricksllc.com and use code BES15 for 15% off. That's BES as in Big Easy Sportsman. And as Dan always says, the best day to start a mock scrape is today. So I'm like, huh. And it was on a pretty good sized tree, like size of your wrist, you know, nothing crazy. But a good rub, nonetheless, for here anyway. So I walk a little further and I see another tree. And this tree's like, dude, I'm not lying, Chase. Like about a foot and a half off the ground was straight. And after about a foot and a half, like the bottom edge of the rub, like where he would have barely caught the bottom edge of it, it was leaned over at like 45 degree angle. Like I swear the tree was sitting like this. Like Huh. Like, there ain't no way that's a rub. I go over there, dude, and that tree is leaned over and bent and still bent. Like, it's sitting like this, green. This tree ain't dead. That deer had hooked it and laid it over, bent it over, and it stayed bent. And, like, the ground was tore up. But I'm like, oh, my goodness. I have stumbled on to some really good sign. So I walked up a little bit further, and I found, like, another, like, you know, small rub. It was maybe like a golf ball size, you know, nothing crazy.
Yeah.
But it was a perfect line up this lake. So I'm like, man. So I just kept walking, and I found another rub on a cypress tree that was like bigger than the first one, like the size of my leg cypress tree. And it was the same thing where the bark was just roughed up. And I got to looking at it. I'm like, man, I actually talked to Colt about it. Colt was going to be on, by the way, but, JC's dog, Annie, that are German short hair, she ended up getting hit by a car last night or Sunday night or Monday night, and they got her in the dog ICU right now. Got like, like nerve damage in one of her legs.
She got hit on their road or she got out to like the actual?
Yeah, I got hit on the side road. Huh. They don't know who hit her or whatever, but.
Well, he tried to call me, I don't know, was it yesterday or the day before yesterday? I won't remember.
Yeah.
I was doing something, didn't get the answer, and then I had talked to him.
Yeah, I hadn't really talked to him either. I called him today to see if he wanted to hop on, but he said that they were going up there to see her. Like, I think she's got a broke hip and a dislocated hip and nerve damage in one of the other hind legs. But they said that they're kind of waiting to see what the nerve damage is going to be like before they do the surgery on the other hip. So she's in pretty bad shape, but maybe
it's gonna be a pretty penny.
Oh yeah, yes indeed. But they still don't know how. Like they couldn't find her for a while. Colt said it was storming rain and dark when they got home, so they couldn't find her. Eventually, they went outside looking for her, and he said that they could barely hear her whimpering, but they couldn't tell where. So eventually, they walked up and found her laying off the edge of the road, and sure enough, been hit.
Dang. Oh.
Yeah.
I had one of my buddies, he had a young deer dog he had in his pen. He's got some nice kennels, and somehow the dog got out of the kennel not too long ago, and he got hit in Highway 43. That was like a couple nights ago.
That's rough, man. You get hit on the highway, it's pretty much over. They usually don't make it.
Nope.
But anyway, that's why Colt's not on, but so back to that sign, man. I talked to Colt about it, and he said that he's seen it before where, like, those cane cutter rabbits, you get in them swamps like that, those cane cutter rabbits are stripped the bark off of trees and eat the bark.
Yeah.
Especially a cypress or, you know, something like that. So I started thinking back in my mind, and I didn't even think about the bent tree. And then I went back in my mind, I'm like, nah, ain't no damn.
I think a bear?
I don't think so, dude. You don't think? It was too low.
Because I know they'll do it, too, sometimes.
So, anyway, I started thinking about the bent over tree, and it's 100% a rub. So, I walked it a little further, and I found where there was, like, three in a cluster. And I was like, well, like, this is the best lead that I have to go on. You know, I wasn't that far off the road, but, you know, going in blind, you don't know. You got to sit it a few times to know if you need to make a move further or, you know, whatever. So, I said it Saturday afternoon and didn't end up seeing anything, but, then I talked to Colt about it too, after, you know, I got out of the woods and all that. He's like, I can't figure out why that a buck would be just walk up and down the lake like that, like parallel with the lake, like 20 or 30 yards off the lake and just walking like linear with it. Like, man, I don't know. I was racking my brain, too. Like, it didn't really make sense to me why all the sign was, like, you know, close to the levee. Obviously, that pinch point, you know, funnels deer through there. So that made sense to me. But then I started thinking about the lake. I'm like, man, I just can't figure it out. And I thought about it. I'm like, hey, dummy, did you see water anywhere when you walked through that swamp? No, it was bone freaking dry. The only water in there is in the lake.
Yeah.
So now I consider myself to be a better hunter than most, But you talk about a kick in the teeth when you just blow past all the sign to get back there.
Right.
Just to figure out that, you know, you're reading it wrong or you're just overlooking it. I think a lot of people do that, man. I'm guilty of it. I mean, I just did it. I've done it in Illinois. I just, you see scrubs and scrapes like, oh man, that can't be nothing. You just breeze on past it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get there just out of nowhere. Yeah,
right. But,
I don't know. Something with them levees and stuff too attracts them deer. I don't know exactly what it is, but I know some places that I've hunted, not too far from here. If you ride that levee or something at night when you're coming out from hunting or whatever, the deer just flood into it for some reason. I don't really know why, but they do hang out around them a lot.
Yeah, and I've hunted that WMA like a little bit with some other people, but it was on a rifle hunt for one of the rifle splits. And, you know, there's a lot of people there during rifle season. So, dude, when I went back Saturday, I didn't see a single car. There wasn't a car within eyesight of me. Nobody at the campgrounds. I mean, it's just a ghost town. Like, that's one thing that I absolutely love about bow hunting is getting in there early season. You will not see a soul until that rifle opener. And then up there, they do splits or whatever. So, you know, they do the first split like around Thanksgiving, the second split's like Christmas and New Year's. And then that's pretty much, I think they do it like a late season muzzle loader or something somewhere in there. But other than that, it's all archery only for deer. But, you know, after I thought about it, you know, and I tried to play it back in my mind, like how I seen the sign and like they have to be going to water in there, but it's the open edge of a lake. Like, how do I know where he's coming and going to get water? Now, this lake's like a mile long. He can be going anywhere between the levee and a mile.
Yep.
So,
was it thick anywhere right there by the lake or by the levee?
Yeah, it's hard to explain. So, like, if so, like running north and south, just for instance, running north and south is the lake, right? And then running north and south, right, 20 yards off the edge of the lake is like a little open hardwood bottom. I mean, it's open, dude. You can see a long way.
And then the levee?
Huh?
And then the levee?
Oh, no. The levee's on the south side. So, like, the levee.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, the lake's running north and south, and the levee's running east and west.
Gotcha.
So, where the bottom of the lake is, running east and west, is where I found some of the sign before. And then running north and south, like parallel with the lake, is where all the rubs and stuff were. So I'm thinking,
right. Man, he may be coming from a long ways, just making his rounds. But if you got anything right there that could be a potential bed, he may be bedding right there and not coming from as far as you may think. He may be bedding right there and everything.
Man, that's kind of what I thought too. Like, it seemed weird to me. I've seen it before, like here where we hunt, you know, you'll find like a little pond or something randomly in the woods, and there'll be rubs all over it. Like, it's just rubbed to pieces all the way around this pond. Yeah. And it's just a big congregation of deer, and a lot of deer using it. And like when they're rubbing, you know, they're leaving scent on the rub. So any deer that comes by is smelling that scent, like, oh, this buck was here.
That's how they communicate.
Right.
Right. Yeah, they communicate through that way. And like you said, as dry as it's been, any water holes that were left, all your deer in that general proximity is coming to that water source. That's the only one that they have. So, like you're saying, you may have 15, 20 different deer visiting that water hole every day and night. And, of course, some of them is going to try to mark their territory, establish dominance, or, I mean, even if they may have a scrape there or something too, and does and fawns and bucks and all of them, they all go to that scrape and communicate through it the same exact way. Like Mr. Dan had said, that he gets, most of the time, he gets more does and fawns in his scrapes than bucks.
Yeah, this place is hard, man. Like, I've hunted up there a couple times during rifle season, and I've never seen a deer in this place. I've never laid eyes on a deer anytime I've been in there. But it's a lot of land, and it's big woods. Like, there's nothing to really congregate the deer. Like, in Illinois or Indiana or, you know, some of the places you're hunting, there's corn and beans every freaking where. The deer don't have to go anywhere. You know, it's
right.
That's what we're trying to explain to people, and they don't want to believe us, is that hunting down here is really, really tough. So you see somebody like Cody that's just knocking him down every year. That is not by coincidence.
No, he's got it figured out.
Yes, indeed. So I'm going back and forth on the, you know, the whole rub thing, and that's what I told Colt. I was like, I think he's just marking the edge of that water, and I'm thinking that, like, all the trees were kind of around the same size, and they were kind of rubbed in the same way. Like, you know, certain deer, like, some will just hook it until it's, like, just oozing sap out of it. I mean, it's bald. There ain't nothing on it. And there were a couple rubs like that, and there were a couple where, like, you can tell he just rubbed his forehead on it a couple times and just kept on walking. So
was it – were they rubbed – like that on the back side of them too?
No.
Or is it just on one side? Like, you can tell, okay, he's headed east, hitting every tree every so often. And if you turn around and look back, you can see the same deal where he may be using that same line to travel. Or is that just a one-way line there, and his other hook line or whatever heading back west was 30 yards away from it?
I found a one spot where it looked like, I really couldn't tell. So, like, it's hard to explain. Like, they were kind of staggered through there, like kind of checkerboard.
Uh-huh.
So, like, one would be hit on, like, the west side, and one would be hit on the east side. Like, there was nothing that indicated, like, he's going with the lake or against the lake. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, it was really hard for me to try to understand it, but...
But, like I said, yeah, I mean, that could get confusing, but that also could have been two different deer coming from two different directions.
I think it was.
That's something you don't know until you just set cameras up, really.
So, like, what I was looking at is, like... And this could be completely wrong. It's like, deer have tendencies, right?
Yeah.
So... There were a couple trees that were, like, just barely hit. Like, you could tell that they just barely rubbed their forehead on it, just enough to get the scent on it, and then they kept on trucking. And then there were some that were hooked two pieces. Like, either multiple deer had hit it, or one good deer, and he spent a lot of time on it. You know what I'm saying? So, like, there were two different types of rubs. Maybe it's the same deer doing it. I don't know, but just me thinking about it, it could be multiple deer, you know, one has a style of, or the tendency to just kind of rub it a little bit, get some scent on it, and keep on trucking. The other one's a little more aggressive, which it's not that far-fetched of an idea, but.
No, and if one smells another buck on it, which is that's what they're doing, putting their scent, he may rile him up a little bit.
That is true.
Get him to
if one
a little bit, like, hey, I'm the man here or whatever. You don't ever know. But
that's a good point, man. Actually, I didn't think about that, Chase. Is if one just barely rubbed his forehead on it, and another one comes behind him and smells it, and it kind of ticks
checking
him off
him
a little
out.
Bit,
hey,
and he did some work on it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good point. Real good point. But so I'm gonna try to go back, depending on this freaking weather, man. It's supposed to rain like a foot from Monday to Saturday. So I'm going to try to.
Oh, you won't be able to get in. You won't be able to get in my lease. With all this rain today, it's going to be so flooded. It'd be coming into your truck.
Oh, yeah. Our lease, too. I'm going to try to go back up there for Saturday. I think I may pop, depending on the rain. I think the rain's supposed to be out of here by like noon on Saturday, they said. So I may try to be up there for Saturday after the rain and hunt Saturday evening, and then try to hunt Sunday morning, Sunday evening, just for the last weekend. And after finding those rubs, there's a pretty good possibility that you know, that I may be able to run into a pretty good one.
Oh yeah. Yep, it don't take but one time.
Yeah, you just got to be there, man. I need a little luck. That's all I need.
Well, another thing too, on them hookings and stuff, like I said, I mean, a lot of people think they see a big tree, like you were saying, with the bark stripped kind of off of it or whatever. Oh my God, this is a Boone and Crockett. This is a giant. That's not always the case. I mean, a lot of your big deer, yeah, they may hit a big tree, but a lot of your big deer is going to hit those wrist size trees because they can get them in between a lot easier and get where they want on them glands and stuff like that. You get a big tree and his horns is hitting it, he may not be able to get his, I don't know what the name of that gland is right there, but what they're rubbing it.
Just forehead glands, all I've ever heard it called.
Yeah. Well, if he gets a smaller tree, he can really rub it on there and disperse the scent a lot better. So just because it's a little tree don't mean it's a three-point hooking it. It may be a 150-inch deer.
Yeah, they've had some 160s come out of there this year.
Yeah, a rub does not dictate the size of the deer. It just tells you that it is a male deer.
The one that really got me excited was the one that was bent. When I seen that, I was like, oh my goodness. Like, it wasn't a small tree. And, I mean, a cypress tree is flexible, you know, but, dude, it takes a big deer to push his head against it and lean it over. It takes a good deer to do that. Body
cypress
size.
Cypress tree. Yeah, cypress tree is pretty stiff.
Yeah.
I mean, he had to put a little bit of push into it.
Oh, he was, dude, I'm telling you, he did some pushing. Yeah. When I seen that sucker leaned over, I was like, there's no way that's a rub. And sure enough, it was.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it could be a 250-pound spike, knowing Louisiana.
Yeah, I mean, you don't ever know.
But he can get it, too. Don't get it twisted. I see a 250-pound spike, he's getting shot. I can guarantee that.
Yeah, or shot at least. That's a fact.
So that's kind of what I've been up to. You just went on a track, didn't you?
Yeah, we had another track. Good buddy of mine, and I grew up with him in Bear Creek Hunting Club. Mr. James Housley, he called me a good buddy. He had shot one by his house, and he shot him. Dude, it was crazy. He shot the deer broadside at 60-something yards with a 12-gauge slug.
Jeez.
Broadside, I mean, we didn't know where he hit the deer. We got there, and it was a very little bit of meat, like the size of the back of an ink pen, just a little bitty chunk of meat, and that was it. Like, no blood, no nothing. The dog runner, he done his little routine, running around peeing on everything, crapping in people's food plots and blah, 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 whatever. And took off. He lined out and struck out. Well, I'm watching the following in there behind him. And he gets in there pretty deep, but then he turns and he comes back. And comes back out to the shot site. And me and my dad, we're still in the woods. And the guy called me and said, hey, the dog's back out here. I'm like, yeah. I said, just leave him alone. Don't mess with him. He's just checking himself. Well, we broke out and got to the road, walked back around to where they were at. And they said, he went back in there. And I'm sitting there, I'm just watching him on the Garmin. And he took a total opposite direction. And 10 times out of 10, I'll say, because I'm that sure of it, if our dog has done that, and then he just goes the T-total opposite direction, 10 times out of 10, that's where the deer went. He's coming in blind. You're taking a dog somewhere that he's never been a day in his life, and you expect him to, hey, know exactly where you shot him and know where the deer went and find him. So it takes him a little bit to figure it out. And sure enough, he went the total opposite direction and got in there about it wasn't too far. I don't remember how far he was. And it said treed. Well, I didn't want to give false hope because what we did find and how far we walked in there behind him, there was zero blood, like not one speck of blood other than a little bitty chunk of meat that was in the food plot. And I was like, I told him that, man, I don't know. I think he might have just grazed this deer or something. It don't look good. And then the dog went back out and everything. And was, I was like, I don't know. But whenever he went that opposite direction and it said treed, I didn't know if he was in there drinking water or laying down. Because, I mean, he will do that, or taking a crap or whatever. Yeah. And any of those, when a dog stops like that, I mean, them collars are pretty accurate. But do they actually know that he's up on a tree or if he's on point or whatever? No, it's just detecting no more motion. Yeah. So it was showing he was treed, and I was like, I didn't want to give false hope to the hunter, like, oh, he's on the deer, and then he's not. He was just in there using the bathroom or something. And so I'm watching it, and they still talking. We're all talking. I kind of bumped my daddy on the arm. I turned that Gorman over toward him, and it's still showing treed. And so he was like, well, we're going to walk down this way and see if we can't get in there closer to him. And as we're walking, I'm like, yeah, he's tree. I said, he got him. And sure enough, he went the opposite direction of what the hunter thought, because just from doing it so long, dude, I can guarantee you there are way more hunters that know exactly where the deer went and tell you that your dog's wrong. Because the dog will go off this way, and he didn't go that way. The deer went this way, I'm telling you. The deer run this way. And then the dog sits down on the deer and is like, no, he didn't. Your deer is over there. So I can't tell you how many times we hear that. Like, oh, he's wrong. He ain't going the right direction. Yeah, he's going the right direction. He knows a lot more than we do. But sure enough, we get over there to him. Kind of got off track, but we got to the deer when we finally broke through there. It was so thick, of course, he had to go through the thicket. And, dude, he double-lunged this deer. I mean, you couldn't have walked up there and just drew a mark any more perfect of where he hit this deer. And it was a hole the size of a golf ball. Now, he didn't get an exit, but still, that big of an entry. And shot the entry side of the deer is what was laying down, and when we flipped him over to drag out, there was zero blood. Like, no, even where the deer was laying, no blood in his nostrils, no blood in his mouth, like zero blood. And he got shot with a 12 gauge slug, and when we flipped him over and went to looking, that bullet cauterized that wound as it went in. And he was not bleeding at all, like zero.
How close was he when he shot?
60-something yards.
That's weird, man.
No blood whatsoever. Like, in the direction he went, if you didn't have a dog, you'd have never found the deer until the buzzards got him or until you smelt him. Because, like, there was nothing to go off of. It was raining. Everything was just damp, like, there was nothing to go off of. If you didn't have a dog, the deer would have never been found. But it was crazy. I mean, because you think if you got shot with a chunk of lead that big, that deer should have, one, he should have probably not went anywhere. He should have dropped right there. But since he did run, you would expect just a bloodbath, but it was zero, nothing.
So that was what, Monday night?
That was.
Or last night?
It was yesterday evening. Yeah, yesterday, wasn't it? Yeah, Wednesday. Yeah, it was yesterday.
Yeah, so it would have been raining all day.
Tuesday. Today's Wednesday. Yeah, and it was
raining. Yeah, it rained all day Tuesday.
It started raining on us on the way out. Yep.
Well, at least he got it.
But, yeah, that's what the dude said. Man, he said, I done walked the total opposite direction. He said, I done swore the deer went back, looped around back behind the stand. He said, I'd have never thought to cross the road I walk in on and go in way over there. I was like, yeah, kind of what happens most of the time. People think that the deer's the opposite direction of what he really is. But like I said, we picked up and learned that stuff from doing it so many years. Like I said, with that dog there, we got – with Tuff, he turned – what is he, five? He did – I think he's 5 years old or so this year, and we've got over 100 recoveries on him. So he's been a good one. Like I said, we don't the tracking game, the people who may not know or the listeners or whatever, tracking used to not be this big of a sport.
We were in it before it blew up and got real big, and then it blew up, and there's so much controversy, and my dog's better than your dog, and a bunch of inflated chests and bowed up men thinking that they got the best of the best, and it's been got to the point like it. We don't push for it. We don't advertise it. We track for word of mouth and just really personal use and just good friends and all that know we have the dog. And like I said, therefore it got real popular. We done pretty good, but he's been a good one. He needs to lose a little weight, old tough. But and when we got the deer, we got him out to the tractor, and the guy had his tractor in there for whatever reason. I don't know if he drove his tractor to hunt or what.
Yeah, I saw the picture with the deer on the tractor. I'm like, I thought they went and tracked this thing. How the hell did he get on the tractor?
I think that dude drove the tractor in there to hunt because it was raining so bad, and the way that place was, it had a bunch of hills and stuff, and it was real slick, and his tractor's four-wheel drive. So I guess he drove his tractor in there close to a stand and then walked. I don't know, but
seemed like it was effective.
I told him. Yeah. We got the deer on that front end loader, and I called for the dog because usually he'll sit and take a picture with the deer. So I told him, I said, come here, Tuff, sit down. Well, that sucker jumped on the deer, jumped onto the front end loader bar that goes across the between the two, and then jumped up on the hood of this guy's big, fine tractor. My dad was like, oh, my God. Come here, get down. And that dude was like, oh, he ain't going to hurt it. He's like, yeah, I didn't want him to scratch your tractor up. And I looked it down, like, really, dude, he scratched your tractor up? He's like, I didn't know. He said, you know, some people's funny about that kind of stuff. I'm like, yeah, you're right. But that sucker jumped up there on the hood and posed for that picture. And was like, oh, my God. Then when we tried to get him off, he didn't want to come. He done got stuck, didn't know how to get down. I'm like, so I'm over there pushing on him, trying to get off the dude's tractor so we can go. It's starting to rain. Well, he slips in between the hood of the tractor and the front end loader. So then he's like upside down with his hook. He got his paws hooked up there on the thing. And like he's like stiffed up, like not wanting to freaking let go. And daddy's like, don't kill him. I'm like, well, he won't let go. I'm trying to get him off of it and crap. And I said, yeah, you make us look like some retards out here.
Hey, man, that dude probably didn't care because he found his deer, so.
No, he was happy. He just said, thanks a million, is what the old man kept saying. He was in his 70s or so, I believe, but I said, that's what it's all about. We enjoyed doing it. It's been fun. But
I'd worked for James for a long time, man.
Did you?
About 8 years on different – I worked for him when he was with Brand, and I worked for him when he was with Brock. He was
Brock.
He was a safety man, had been for a long, long time, and then he'd got to where he would he'd come into plants, you know, that they were having either not enough production or they were, you know, stuff wasn't managed right or whatever. He'd come in and try to turn them around. So that's what he did. He'd come into a site and spend, you know, 6-8 months and get all the production up and get all the safety and recordables and stuff down. And then he'd move on to the next site. That's what he was doing last time I saw him. I hadn't seen him in a while, but yeah, I worked for him for a long time.
Yeah. Oh man. Like I said, I grew up with James and them at the camp. Every summer, that's where I lived, was at his camp, Bear Creek. But yeah, like I said, we did good. Found a deer for the guy, and he's excited, but I think I'm about done with the deer hype. I've had enough of it. I'm switching gears on trying to get into a little coyote hunting, kill some coyotes and stuff before turkey season, and then I'll be on to the next.
Yeah, I got this weekend coming up. It's going to be my last hurrah, so I'm going to go in there and go back in that spot that I was in last weekend and on public and see what I can do there. I mean, I may not see anything, but I feel like I got a pretty good lead on some what seemed to be fresh signs. So, you know, it's worth a shot just to close out the season. But
yeah, you never know. You may be able to capitalize on it.
But after this coming weekend, it's going to be full blown target mode. Be 3D tournaments, field tournaments, and turkey hunting in between.
That's coming up, ain't it?
Yeah.
Target season's coming
up. Yeah, they do indoor. So indoor is just you're shooting at like paper targets and you're shooting like that for score. They do indoor basically throughout hunting season. So obviously I don't do any of that. But I think like the indoor state championships and stuff are, I think, either this past weekend or this coming weekend. And then they'll do like a couple more indoor shoots in like February. But usually February kicks off the 3D season and field season, which is mostly what I shoot.
Okay. And on the indoor stuff, like what's their ranges? Like how far do you shoot indoor?
20 yards.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. But
I didn't know if they like had 60 yard indoor things and stuff like that.
No, they have so many different styles of archery. It's they have like what they call feet of field, which is at like 50 meters is like the standard. And you shoot every arrow you shoot is at that distance. And then like the indoor stuff though, all the indoor stuff is at 20 yards. And it seems super easy. Like, oh man, I'll go in there and clean that. Yeah. No, you're not. Cause indoor game is something that I don't even do. So it's the indoor stuff is way more mental than like shooting a 3D tournament or an outdoor field tournament. But here recently, man, I've fallen in love with the field stuff. Just I like shooting at distance. Like distance is the great equalizer in everything.
Yeah, I ain't never really got into none of that. I would probably need to get a little bit better at my shooting abilities before I try to go make a fool of myself out there amongst a bunch of people.
Yeah, we got a tournament coming up, I think February 4th or February 3rd, whatever the first weekend in February is, we're doing like a range day at American Hunter where it's not going to be, you know, for prizes or score or anything, but it'll be just kind of a fun 3D shoot. I think they're going to have some food and stuff just so people can get some practice in. And then
that's cool.
February 10th is American Hunter's ASA qualifier. So that's for you to qualify to shoot nationally on the ASA stuff. And
so what do you have to do? I don't know. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners don't know either. To qualify to go to the nationals, what do you have to do to be able to do that?
Really, it's just a membership. It's a $50 membership for the year for ASA to be a member, and then you only have to shoot one qualifier to be eligible to shoot any of the national stuff. So it's like
okay, so you don't have to have like this much earnings to make
I mean they do that as a formality. Like the ASA qualifiers is just to support the local ASA clubs basically, and then the national stuff kind of runs itself as far as ASA goes.
So really if you can shoot really good, but you don't travel and do all these tournaments and competitions and all that stuff, you can pay that membership, shoot one qualifying event, and go to nationals and have a potential winner.
Yep. Yep.
So I didn't know that.
Yeah, the ASA stuff is like I say, they do the qualifiers to support the local clubs and stuff, and all you have to do is fire one arrow at one qualifier to be qualified, basically.
Wait, so you don't even have to score a certain?
Nope.
You just got there and lob an arrow?
You have to post a score for the qualifier to qualify. It's kind of weird, but.
Yeah, I would think as competitive as that sport is and how precise you have to be, you would have to at least do some kind of certain score. Like you need to score a at least a 120 or I don't know how the scoring or the point system is and that kind of stuff, but just saying, like, you would think you'd have to have some kind of certain point system or to be able to meet to qualify to compete at that level.
Nope. I guess they do it for everybody to just be to get more people into it, because I mean they have so many different divisions in ASA. It's crazy. There's like 30 divisions or something. So there's youth, and then there's divisions by age and divisions by distance, unknown and known, rangefinder, no rangefinder. So there's a lot of different classes. So basically, you qualify for whatever class you're shooting in, and then you just kind of go from there. But so the ASA qualifier is February 10th at American Hunter, and then the next day, February 11th, I'm going to Percy Quinn in Mississippi and shooting their Pine Cone Classic is what they call it.
Classic.
The old Pine Cone Classic. But that's a modified field archery round, and they do that for money. So they do a couple of those a year. So that's pretty fun. And there you shoot.
So where is the national usually?
There's five or six, I think, throughout the year. There's one actually in Foley, Alabama. That's February 24th. It's like 2.5 hours in basically Gulf Shores. So shooting the qualifier on the 10th, I'm going to shoot that tournament. That qualifies me for ASA. And then I'm going to go to Foley. I think me and Bart and I think Brad are going to go. That's all three of us from American Hunter that shoot for them. So we're going to go and shoot the national tournament in Foley. That's like February 23rd or something like that. So that'll be the first one for the year. And then...
So, like the you shoot American Hunter, qualify. Like, when is there? I guess what I'm asking, when is the, like, if you win it, you're the champion, like you're the national champion or whatever.
You win a national tournament. I mean, you beat whoever shows up. So, the ASA stuff, they do like six national shoots a year. So. I mean, you could have six different
titles. Right.
You have six. Oh, won. Okay. I'm champion. I won Foley, or I won Camp Minden, Louisiana.
Okay. See, I didn't know if it was like the NFR. Like, you got the NFR finals in the rodeo.
Oh, no. They do a shooter of the year.
Everybody qualifies to get there. Gotcha.
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting the way they do it, but... So I plan on doing that. Plan on shooting all the field stuff. My goal this year is to focus more on the field, because I took third place in state last year for the marked 3D field shoot, which is like they call it marked because they have all of the yardages marked. Like, oh, this is a 38 yard target. This is a 50 yard target. Whatever. So they do a state championship for the Mark 3D side, and then they do an outdoor field championship, and they do a 900 championship, which basically all the same stuff. It's just scored a little bit different. So that's my goal, is to shoot the three. I mean, it'll end up being, you know, 8 or 10 field tournaments, but my goal for this year is to be on the podium for state.
Heck yeah. So on those, like the smaller qualifying rounds and stuff, do they pay out or?
Some do, some don't. Like Percy Quinn, they do their own kind of deal with the pine cone shoot, and they'll do payouts for that. And there's a lot of local tournaments that do payouts. So it just depends. Like the ASA stuff doesn't pay out because that's part of the national organization. And then like the field stuff doesn't pay out because that's part of the NFAA, which is the National Field Archery Association. So, gotcha. Like all the major stuff, you're not going to get any pay from, but I mean, you can make a pretty good bit of money at some of the local stuff.
There's not much money in it.
Not really, unless you're doing it on a large level or like a really high level. But I mean, like for instance, last year I went and shot they had an outdoor expo in Columbia, Mississippi. And yeah. Waldo's Sports Center put on a 3D shoot, indoor 3D. It was just small, like 10 target course inside, and they were paying out 500 to first, like 300 to second, and 100 to third to shoot 100 division and an open division, which is like target setup. So I went in there with my PSE hunting bow and laid the smackdown on some people. I ended up walking out of there with $500. So, I mean, you can make a pretty good amount of money.
And some arrows, too.
Oh, yeah. Won 2 dozen arrows. Black Eagle arrows. That's going to be my field arrows for this year. So,
yep. I remember that.
Yep. And shot next to Morgan Reeves, which is a professional female archer. I mean, she took 2 second place podiums behind Paige Pierce at ASA tournament. So, I mean, she's real deal.
Hey, all I know is when you swap over to them DCA arrows, you'll definitely be on the podium.
I hope. I'm waiting to hear back from them, man. I sent in my application and they've been at ATA and all that, so they've been super busy with that.
Yeah, they've been on
Dan's been there, and there's a whole bunch of people at ATA. Mm-hmm. And they were doing, it was ATA and something else, some other kind of outdoor show.
The Ohio Classic. Yep.
Yeah, that's where Dan went. Dan went to, and DCA was at Ohio Classic, because when I talked to Dan on the phone that day, he said that he was having somebody print like a huge banner with Dan and his lion on it, because he's the only person, or one of the only 100% arrow kills. And it was with a DCA arrow. So he said he was getting somebody to print up that banner and they were going to try and promote it and stuff.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I got a few things I'm working on, man. I hope that, that we can make some of it come to life.
Yeah.
We'll just,
for sure,
keep on keeping on in the meantime and try to help people where we can. If one person listens and learns something, hey man, that's enough for me.
Yep, for sure.
But who doesn't like to talk about deer hunting though? Or turkey hunting or archery or a coyote hunt or a hog hunt. Who doesn't like to talk about that stuff?
I don't know. I can't think of nobody.
Exactly.
I know who is sick of hearing about it.
Who, your wife?
My wife.
Yeah, mine too.
But it's just getting started. I mean, deer season is the least thing for me. I mean, when springtime rolls around, it's pretty hectic around here.
Yeah, I've already talked to boss man, old Colt, and I think we're going to try to go pretty hard at some turkeys this year.
Yep, that's my passion. That's what I live, eat, sleep, breathe, and will die to.
I've never killed one, man. That's a goal this year. I'd like to at least, not necessarily kill one, but I'd at least like to get the opportunity for one. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, man, a couple of years ago when I started building mouth calls and stuff, when I dipped off into the actual building my own calls, it really set a fire. So like I'm like way more into it than what I already was, and I didn't think that was possible. It's like I'm wanting to take things to the next step now and just upgrading all my equipment and starting to do different kind of pot calls and start building box. I'm wanting to get into the whole line of calling, not just diaphragm calls. So that's a whole another step, different technique and everything when you get off into friction compared to air produced calls, but it's fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah,
and it helps me to be a better caller. I mean, because you're around it and you're experimenting so many different stretches and cuts and stuff in the reeds and learning this and that. So it makes me a better caller too. And then whatever I can do, like if I can help anybody to become a better caller, and I'm no professional, I'm no champion, I'm nothing like that, but I'm not bad caller either. So
you played in state before, hadn't you?
Yeah, but like I said, a couple of times, but I just enjoy doing it. It's fun, and like the turkey calling contests and competitions are outside of turkey season.
Yeah.
So when turkey season's over and you're still fired up and hyped up about it, you still got something to go and play with and with your buddies and all, and just gives you something to do and just keeps that fire burning, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to me with the archery stuff, man. I wanted to, you know, as soon as season's over, like I still want to shoot a bow. Like it's weird. I just love to shoot a bow, and I don't know. I just kind of transformed that into what it is now. And, you know, I started getting into it pretty seriously and come close to making some podiums in state. But,
heck yeah,
you know, I've won quite a bit of money and stuff like that. And I know you've placed in state for turkey calling several times and went to several out of state. You ever placed out of state?
No, I never placed out of state, but I haven't been to really too many of them. Like I said, I've got first loser twice in Louisiana, placed second.
Shoot, I'll take that number two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody wants the championship.
I should have had number one, but I had a slip in one of my runs, and I knew it was going to cost me, and it did. But that, like I said, it's cool and it's fun to, I placed or whatever and all. That's all good and all. But when it comes down to it, that ain't why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I like to do it. I mean, if there was no money, no prizes, no plaques, no nothing like that, I would probably still do it just because I love to do it.
Yeah, and it's going to help you in the woods too.
Yeah.
Well, sort of.
To a certain extent.
That's one thing I've come to learn is that the turkey calling for a competition doesn't really translate to killing them.
Yeah,
and no. Cole will tell you
if
that
you
too.
If you do what you do in a competition, you may kill a Rio in Texas, but you come down here to the home of Chitta National Forest or down here in Livingston Parish, Louisiana, and you try that, good luck, buddy.
Have they released the dates for state yet or no?
No, I don't know when it's going to be.
Or where it's going to be?
I know it's going to be back at Kenyon's. They got a contract or whatever now. So
oh, really?
The Louisiana State competition is there now.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
At the Southern Boys store. Yep. Yeah, they just had this past Saturday, they just had the Peach State Classic in Georgia, and I was going to go to it, and it snuck up on me. I forgot all about it, and I didn't get to make it. I was off of work for it and everything, and I just forgot about it, so I didn't get to make it.
When's their big buck contest, do you know?
That is...
it's February or March, I thought.
I think it's...
it was in the spring last year.
It's February.
It was still chilly.
I think it's March. I think it may be March because it's March 8th or February 8th. I can't remember which one it is because we'd actually just talked to Kenyon the other day. He called me and because they're doing the proceeds and stuff that we raise at it. They're donating it back to Lighthouse Baptist Church, our church here.
Oh, that's cool.
So we're trying to get everything in line and nailed down of what we're going to do for that. And they're going to do some kind of cook-off thing, and whatever they raise is what they're going to donate. So they're trying to get all that down. But I think it was March. I had to look back. I forgot.
Colt to bring his for to get him to score it so he can enter it in the contest for the out-of-state. I think I may bring my little 90-something inch 9-point for the in-state.
Dude, it don't matter what he scores. Sarah won a gun last year off of her spike.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, I really admire what Kenyon and Southern Boys does for the community. Like, that's, it's people like that is the reason, like, I wanted to be involved in it and be involved in that community, you know, whether it's me trying to share through archery or share through the podcast or whatever. Like, man, we take it for granted a lot of times that, you know, oh, we're talking about big buck contests and state tournaments and this and that. And we have all this local stuff going on. And, you know, a lot of people just don't have that opportunity. So it's super cool to be involved.
He's all right. He's okay, dude. Yeah. Mediocre. I mean, he's all right.
Yeah, we've known him for a long time. It's cool to see him.
Hey, he's come a long way. He's come a long way for himself. I mean, some people ragging, whatever you want to call it, but he's worked through the steps and went through the process, and he's made a name for himself. I mean, he really has. It's become his little deal is pretty big now, and so kudos to him.
Man, he had so many people tell him that he was stupid, and man, you giving up that lawn care and landscaping business? Yep. I cannot believe. Like, just talked about him like a dog, but he saw it. You know, he saw the vision for it, and he had the passion for it. Now the dude's signing. I mean, kind of speaks for itself. But all, I mean,
well, he's one of the biggest liked social media platforms in social media.
Oh yeah, his cooking stuff is getting millions and millions of views every video. Oh,
dude, after he started his seasoning lineup and all, he is really getting. I think he gets more on his cooking stuff than he does hunting.
Yeah,
by a long shot.
Yep, I think so too. But I mean, that's all that to say, you know, I mean, look at us. We just wanted to start a podcast just to have something fun to do and to keep from talking our wives' ears off. You know, maybe it turns into something, maybe it doesn't, but you know, we're kind of making our own way. I mean, we're both on Wise Eye field staff and affiliated with Mr. Dan and his sense. And you know, I'm a shop shooter now for American Hunter and be competing under them. So it's pretty cool, man.
Heck yeah.
And hopefully.
Baby steps. Yeah.
I mean, one step at a time. And it's only first couple weeks of January. And, you know, we got a lot left to do. So hopefully we can keep ball rolling.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that'd be a problem.
No, man. I'm too fired up. Speaking of that, I know you had planned to get on some turkey guys and stuff like that. And in. For sure, when we get around turkey season, definitely want to do that. But I'd like to have some archery guys, get them involved, you know, as soon as season ends, and just give some different perspectives. And there's a lot of people buying bows now, man. Believe it or not, bow hunting is, and archery in general, is bigger than it's ever been. I mean, we were in the shop the other day, and there was 15 or 20 people coming in there. He sold like 3 or 4 bows on a random Wednesday, and the season's over.
Crazy. Yep.
So
people buying them. I'm ready to break mine over a tree.
I need mine for one more weekend, and then I'll let it sit around, and I'll be shooting the target rig.
I gotta get mine. I just need to come up here to American Hunter and let y'all get that thing shooting right. It's out. It's tearing bad on it when you shoot it through paper, and you can see it when you shoot it.
Yeah, if I had to guess, dude, it's going to be strings or string related, because those Matthews are notorious. There's like 2 or 3 years of bows where the strings were just horrible. And I mean, there's a lot of people who bought Matthews bows, and the day they bought them, they bought a set of strings and they changed them the same day. They will not shoot the stock strings that come on the older Matthews. Supposedly, I say older. But
I like the bow. It shoots good and all, but it just needs to be tuned.
Yeah, we'll do some work on
strings or whatever y'all figure out. That's more of your game than mine. I just take it hunting.
Yeah.
But
well, I guess this coming weekend, we'll see what I can do in the woods, and then I'm hoping we have another another buck episode to talk about come Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, that'd be a good way to end it.
But if not, you know, we'll still be here.
Heck yeah. Well, hopefully the listeners don't give up on us. We got a lot to come and a lot of things up our sleeves that we're hoping we'll be able to pull out the hat, and just have to stay tuned and see where it goes from here.
Yeah, one thing I want to do is stay consistent throughout the quote-unquote off season. I don't want to be one of those shows that you know, that takes the off season off and they only do it during hunting season. I don't think that's – there's a lot of people that eat, sleep, and breathe anything to do with the outdoors. And, I mean, whether it's fishing or whatever, we're gonna bring content this year for sure.
Yeah, it's not going to be that hard to do for us because I'm not out there just during the 4 months of deer season. I'm hunting or catching something 365 days a year.
Yep.
So
we'll have plenty to talk about, man.